We're going to pick up with antibiotics 2. This is an old thing for my PBA. All right. But make sure that your email address is correct on eCollege, because that is how I will email the class. I have been emailing the class several times. If you have not gotten my emails yet, that's what you got to do. Question?
I haven't gotten an email, but I'm not on eCollege either.
And, you're not on eCollege?
I was over the summer.
But you're not now?
But I'm not now, and remember we had
problems
with it before, and then Professor Brooks called, and
okay.
We just tried
it again. All right, send me an email, and I'll see if I can get that worked out. Is everyone else able to log into eCollege properly? Jawohl, mein Führer. Okay. So today we're going to talk about bacteriostatic inhibitors of protein synthesis. Ooh, yay. All right. Yes, I can tell you're sleeping already. Now, what is protein synthesis? The making of new proteins. Now, in order for bacteria to grow, they need new proteins. So if we inhibit the growth of or the making of those new proteins, what have we inhibited? Bacterial growth. So these drugs are primarily going to be bacteriostatic, meaning that they're not going to necessarily kill them outright, although they might, but they're going to inhibit their growth. And you can see here's all the different drug classes we're going to talk about. First one is tetracyclines. Who here has ever been on tetracycline? Or doxycycline, or minocycline, or sumicin? Okay. It's very, very commonly used for acne. And it is also very commonly used, one of them at least, is commonly used for malaria prophylaxis. So those are the two places you're most likely to have gotten them as a child or on a mission trip. All right, they are very broad spectrum. They work against a whole slew of different things. All of the agents, there's 6, but you only have to remember 3. Isn't that nice of me? You're like, whatever. It would be nice to remember none. But so you have to remember 3 of those 6. They're all very similar in their action. The only difference between them is how long they last. The way they work is they're going to bind to the 30S ribosomal subunit and inhibit the binding of transfer RNA to messenger RNA at the ribosome unit. Whoa! Could you please explain that? Who wants to come up here and explain that for me? Because I didn't get that last sentence. Wah, 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 wah. You want to explain it to us? You want to come up? Okay. Well, how about if I draw and you tell me what I'm drawing? Okay.
Oh, no.
My old nemesis, the board. All right. Here, let's throw away these blue ones and get some black ones. Okay. You want to do it? Okay. All right. Anything that you use? Oh, by the way, how many of you have ever gotten a ticket sometime in your life? What's the first thing the cop asks you when he pulls you over? Do you know why I stopped you? What's the second thing they ask?
Put your hands up.
No. They don't ask that. They say, do you know how fast you were going? And then they ask, do you know what the speed limit was? I'm trying to teach you guys how not to incriminate yourselves, and all you don't care. You watched it, huh? Yeah, there's a video you should watch on YouTube called Why You Should Never Talk to Cops. Because anything you say can will be used against you in a court of law. But did you know that if you say something that could exonerate you to the cops, it's not admissible? It's considered hearsay. If you tell the cop something that can be used, whether you are innocent or guilty, if it can be used against you, they can and they will use it against you. But if you tell them something that could, say, that show that you're innocent, it's not admissible. It's considered hearsay. So there's nothing you can say to a cop that will help you. Now, there are some things you could say to a cop that might get you out of a ticket. I'm sorry, sir. I don't really know. Your badge number is what you meant. She meant badge number. All right. So never talk to cops. What's this right here? It's a circle. That's very good. This little circle is called a ribosome. Okay, now, what does a ribosome do? Kara, what does a ribosome do? Now, I know you had A&P and microbiology. Do you want to use a lifeline? All right. Stephanie? Protein synthesis. Very good. Woohoo! Congratulations. Do you want to take the money or do you want to go for double?
Double.
All right. What is this? So what are those? Not DNA.
RNA.
What kind of RNA?
Messenger
RNA. Now, three units of the messenger RNA are called a
codon.
And what do they code on? Not exactly. This little unit is going to bind to the ribosome. But what's the purpose of the codon?
To make a protein.
Okay, and how do we make proteins? We put together amino acids. So this codon codes for an amino acid. So this little bonding right here is then going to trigger something else to come along. And what's this thing right here?
Transfer
RNA. So the right transfer RNA is going to match up to the messenger RNA codon, and it's going to have attached to it, not a ribosome, not a codon, amino acid. Now, the way tetracycline is going to work is it's going to prevent this union from taking place. So it's going to kind of sit in here and block this from happening. Got that? It's going to block the union of messenger to transfer RNA. So if they can't get together, you're not going to have the next amino acid added onto the chain.
How does it do that?
Magic. I don't know. Right, so it's going to inhibit protein synthesis, and if you can't make new proteins, eventually it's going to die.
I'm sorry. What was the scribble?
Don't be sorry. What?
What was the scribble?
That's tetracycline, blocking them. This is not to scale. The ribosome, see, our ability to draw on the blackboard is, my ability to draw on the blackboard is severely limited by my lack of artistic talent. Yes. So in reality, thank you. In reality, the ribosome is like big, and this kind of passes through it. And as it passes through it, this codon binds to the surface here. So when tetracycline binds to the surface of the ribosome, it prevents that from taking place. Okay. So basically, it gets blocked out. How many of you have ever gone shopping? All right. Yeah, I can answer this one. Now, How many of you have ever shopped at Walmart?
Yeah.
Okay. You go to Walmart and there's like, better yet, Sam's Club. And there's like four people in front of you and they've got the whole store on their cart. And so a new line opens up and you start taking your cart. You're like, boom, boom. And just before you get there, someone pops in front of you. And then their credit card won't get accepted. And they don't have a check, and they don't have cash, and they block you out. You can't get out of the store, right? That's kind of like what tetracycline does. Yes. All right. Now, there's quite a bit of resistance to tetracycline, and the way that bacteria become resistant. One is they don't take up the drug. They go, that tastes gross. Spit it out. So if the drug doesn't get inside the bacteria, it can't work. Another way they can do it is by producing enzymes that destroy the tetracycline. I guess tetracyclinases. And then the last one is some ribosomes have shields of their own that prevent the tetracycline from doing that, from binding. Now, we use it to treat things like rickettsial diseases, which would be Rocky Mountain spotted fever, typhus, and Q fever, whatever that means. Everyone's favorite, chlamydia. What's the nickname for chlamydia? Say it again. Do it while you say it. The clap. Okay, the clap. Brucellosis, cholera. Cholera is not very common in this country, but what is cholera? It is a diarrhea illness caused by a bacteria, and it's most commonly associated with what problem? And what causes it? Where do we get it from? Dirty water. Yes, fecal material in our water supply. And then Mycoplasma pneumonia. Mycoplasma is a very small, itty-bitty, tiny little bacteria. We call it atypical pneumonia. We can use tetracycline to treat that. We can also use tetracyclines to treat anthrax. Not the heavy metal band. Yes. All right, some other things we can use it for. Acne. So, some of you may have had this prescribed for you to treat acne at one time in your life. We can also use it to treat peptic ulcer disease. Now, wait a minute. I thought that NSAIDs caused ulcers. How does that help? How does tetracycline cure ulcers? I don't get it.
Kills the Helicobacter.
Say again?
Kills the Helicobacter pylori.
All right, so remember, what are the three things that cause ulcers? H. pylori, or NSAIDs, and ischemia. Yeah, we're going to learn all about that later on in the semester. So we use it to treat the H. pylori. We can also use it for periodontal diseases. And what do we call that? Gum gingivitis. All right, classification. Remember there are three different types, long, short, and medium acting. Tetracycline is the one you need to know of the shorts. Shorts. Oh, I lied to you. You only need to know two. Tetracyclines. How cool is that? You need to know tetracycline and doxycycline. Doxy is long, tetra is short. All right. You give them PO, and they're pretty well absorbed, but they work better on an empty stomach, especially the short-acting ones. They are all bound by calcium supplements, milk, magnesium, and iron supplements, and most antacids. Which means you should never give them with any of those items. Now, what food item contains a lot of calcium? Yeah. Milk. So don't give them with milk. Don't give them with cheese. Don't give them with ice cream. All right. They are widely distributed in the body, but not so much in the cerebral spinal fluid. well, the short and the intermediate are eliminated through the kidney, the long ones through the liver. All right, adverse effects. GI irritation can cause burning and pain, indigestion type stuff. Oh, cramps. Oh, now nausea, vomiting, diarrhea. Fun. What? Pepto what? All right, here's a big one in kids. Bone and teeth can cause discoloration of developing teeth. So we don't give tetracyclines to kids under the age of 12. Unless you want them to have nice yellow teeth. Can also cause hypoplasia of the enamel. What's hypoplasia?
Decreased growth.
Which can leave a person with weak teeth. Also can suppress long bone growth in premature infants. So little newborns, you don't give them tetracycline either, even though their teeth are going to fall out and they don't have any at that time. Can also cause super infections like pseudomembranous colitis and everyone's favorite.
Candida.
Yes, candida. Can cause hepatotoxicity and renal toxicity, but this is really the one that I want to talk about. Phototoxicity. What does that mean? Sensitivity to getting your picture taken? No, don't take my picture. Okay, to the light. And in particular, like you said, the sun. Now, the amount of phototoxicity varies. Some people, it acts like as a tanning accelerator. You're like, look at me. I look like really, really dark, and I only spent 10 minutes out in the sun. Other people will put on SPF 50, go out in the sun 15 minutes, and have sun poisoning. Right, Kelly?
Right.
Okay, so the amount of phototoxicity can vary. Now, once I was a camp counselor, and I was a sailing instructor and canoeing guy, and the doctor put me on tetracycline, and I'm like, do you have any idea that I'm working out in the sun? Yeah. Sometimes doctors don't make those connections. So make sure you know what your patient is doing on a regular basis. Or if you have a patient who comes in who's like super tan and physician prescribes tetracycline for them, you know, you may want to suggest an alternative. Or if it's a short-term thing, make sure the patient knows that they better not be going out in the sun because some very bad things can happen.
What would happen if they went in a tanning bed?
Like same five. Thing, only worse.
Yeah.
All right. So those are the tetracyclines. All right, next one is the macrolides. Now, what were the two macrolides I said you needed to remember? Erythromycin and the Z-Pak.
No,
you guys don't really need to remember clarithro, I don't think. On the test, azithromycin and erythromycin are the ones I'll use. Azithromycin, by the way, is the Z-Pak. Now, it's not always given as a Z-Pak. Sometimes it's given IV.
What is a Z-Pak?
Who here has never had a Z-Pak? All right, what's the Z-Pak's claim to fame, someone who's had one? Well, you take it for 5 days, and it lasts in your body for 10. It's an antibiotic. Yeah. Anyway. All right. So the way it works, very similar, only instead of binding to the 30S, it's going to bind to the 50S. Now, on the test, am I going to ask you, is this bind to the 30S or the 50S subunit? No. All you need to know is that it binds to the ribosome somewhere, somehow blocks protein synthesis. All right. It is broad spectrum. The major adverse effects are GI. And it's dose related. The higher the dose, the worse they are. Nausea, diarrhea are the most common, can also have vomiting. You're going to get a lot of false allergies. Patients say, I'm allergic to erythromycin. Well, what kind of reaction do you have? Oh, I have diarrhea. It's not an allergy. It's just a side effect. No. If you take it and you get diarrhea that night, that's just a side effect. Just makes you go. Gives you upset stomach. So that's one of the bad things about the Z-Pak. And again, it's dose related. So the higher the dose, the more likely a person is to get it. One of the possible treatments for chlamydia is you give them 4 grams of azithromycin, 4,000 milligrams. Now, the usual dose would be 500 to 250 milligrams a day. So that's bad. I mean, that person's going to be in the bathroom for a while. All right. So let's talk about everything we're going to talk about erythromycin here applies to azithromycin as far as uses. What's Legionella? You tell me that. Because you've all read The Coming Plague, or at least half of it. Something with air conditioning. Good job. And what does it have to do with air conditioning? It can cause a respiratory problem and death. All right, so it's a bacteria that lives in air conditioning systems, and if it overgrows, it can cause outbreaks of pneumonia and death. So we can use it for that. We can use it for diphtheria. Now, have any of you ever had a diphtheria vaccine? Yes, indeed. What's it called?
DPT.
The DPT. What does the D stand for? What does the P stand for?
Pertussis.
Oh, the next one. Hey. And what's the last one?
Tetanus.
You only get that when you're a kid. When you get your booster shot later, you get the TD. What does TD stand for? Tetanus and diphtheria. Toxoid. What's a toxoid again? I'm sure we've mentioned this before. It's not a killed bacteria, but you're close. The toxoid is the toxin with the dangerous part removed. So your body creates antibodies against the toxin without having to actually deal with the real poison. That's a toxoid. All right, can use it for chlamydia, mycoplasma pneumonia. Again, that's called atypical pneumonia. So if you ever hear them say, well, they've got atypical, they're going to put them on either tetracycline or one of these macrolides. It's used as an alternative to penicillin for patients who are allergic. So who here is allergic to penicillin? All right, chances are when you were a kid, every time you got an ear infection, they put you on erythromycin or azithromycin. Chances are. We also use them for strep pneumo. All right, kinetics. Erythromycin comes in 4 different forms based on the salts. I don't really care about what they are. Neither do you. Okay. All right. One thing we need to talk about here with this off-label use, because you will have a question on your test. Erythromycin causes GI symptoms, and what's the usual GI symptom? Nausea and diarrhea. Not so much vomiting, more the diarrhea. So one of the things that we can use it for in low doses is to speed a person's gut up. So if you ever see erythromycin, 200 milligrams, 4 times a day, and it's usually going to say before meals and at bedtime, what that means is the doctor is not prescribing it as an antibiotic, they're prescribing it as a GI irritant to make their bowels go faster. 200 milligrams, 4 times a day, before meals and at bedtime. So it's usually written this way. EES for erythromycin or ethanol succinylate, 200 milligrams, POQID, meaning 4 times a day, AC, before meals, and HS, hour of sleep. Now, in the hospital, we're not supposed to use this QID anymore, so you probably won't see the QID, but it'll say 4 times a day, AC and HS, before meals and with bedtime. And what is it being used for? To speed up the bowels. So if a patient has GERD, where they're having esophageal reflux coming back up, you can speed up the bowels, make it less likely to have reflux. Or if a person has gastroparesis, where their gut is just slow, you can use it to speed up the gut. They don't use erythromycin that way, only erythromycin. All right, blah, blah, blah. All right, so common uses for macrolides. First one is CAP. What's CAP stand for? Community-acquired pneumonia. What's the other kind of pneumonia we have? If we can get it in the community or we can get it in the hospital. And what's the word for infections acquired in the hospital? Say again? Nosocomial. All right, so we use it for CAP. We also use it for atypical. And what's the bug type in atypical? It's on the slide before. Mycoplasma. chlorithromycin can be used for H. pylori, blah, blah. Azithromycin, the Z-Pak. Long half-life, and very few interactions, so it's much more commonly used. Don't need to know those. All right, clindamycin. Clindamycin has no relationship with the other mycins. It's its own drug class. It binds to 50S subunits, kind of like macrolides do, but different. It is very broad spectrum. It affects almost all aerobes, and it affects gram-positive anaerobes. The biggest problem with it is it loves to cause pseudomembranous colitis because it has such a broad spectrum. So because of that, it's not used very much anymore. But in the old days, they used to use this a lot for patients who were allergic to penicillin. Yes. Yes, it's also used in a topical form for acne. So like Clindagel or Cleosin T, Plegets, it's used topically for acne also. All right, so it can be used PO, IM, and IV, but PO is the most common. And was there anything else we need to say about that? No. Yes, ma'am. You tell me. You're not going to find it earlier in that slide because we talked about it yesterday. Well, we'll talk about that in a minute. Yeah. We'll talk about that in a second. So what? Yeah. So is that what you're looking for, C. diff? Okay. All right, now before we move on, if you have a patient who has clindamycin, is there anything that we can do for that patient to help prevent them from getting pseudomembranous colitis?
Eat yogurt.
Okay, why would eating yogurt help? Say again? Okay, because yogurt contains bacteria. So if you're eating live bacteria, that helps to balance out the C. diff because you've been killing all these others, but you're not killing the C. diff. So by eating yogurt or by going to a health food store and getting I think you can even give it Publix now, getting Lactinex or Lactobacillus tablets, you can help possibly prevent diarrhea.
So it's not the Acidophilus in it?
Well, Acidophilus is one kind of Lactobacillus.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It doesn't necessarily have to be Acidophilus, but it probably will be.
So is this used very often?
Say again?
Is this still used often?
What, clindamycin?
Yeah.
Yes and no. It's not used nearly as much as it used to be, but it is still used quite commonly. All right, so when we say it's not used as much, I mean, it used to be everyone got it. Now only some people get it. And who is most likely to get this drug prescribed? Someone who is allergic to penicillin.
So is this like next in line?
Probably Z-Pak or erythromycin would be next in line, and then clindamycin. The other thing is, Augmentin is really expensive. If you get a prescription for 10 days of Augmentin, it's probably like $130. You can get 10 days of clindamycin for like $20. So you can also use it for patients who are not quite as rich